Trail for the Joyride stops in Onalaska this morning. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. We're broadcasting on location from the Timbers in Onalaska. We are joined this hour to talk about the latest news from the presidential campaign trail, and we'll touch on some state politics as well this hour. We are joined by Joe, the political scientist. I guess that one fell flat. Joe Heim is a professor of political science at UW La Crosse. Good morning.
Well, I don't do plumbing, I'll tell you that.
You can call me Joy, the talk show host, if you want to.
Okay.
Professor Heim. I brought up that Joe, the plumber reference, because we all know, that came up about 25 times in Wednesday's presidential debate. John McCain was using this example of Joe, this guy who did plumbing in Ohio, as an example of how Barack Obama's tax policies would hurt people, working people like Joe. But I guess it turns out that maybe not so much.
Like a lot of things in this election, things aren't always what they seem.
Yeah, explain that a little
bit. Well, apparently he's not in the $250,000 range for income. He's actually he's a contractor, not a plumber. And I think he's making in the $40,000. And the business he's thinking of buying may not be anything close to $250,000.
Yeah, so we maybe have heard the last of Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail.
15 minutes of fame. That's it.
All right, I'll stop referring to him too. Except to say, will we hear John McCain still trying to punch away at the tax policies of Barack Obama as the next 18 days proceed?
I think what we heard in the debate, which by the way I thought was a pretty interesting debate. It was in some ways the best of the debates. I think what we've heard was essentially what's going to happen the next 18 days. In other words, what are the issues that they're going to focus on? What are their strategies? Because essentially this is going to kick off the last, the end run here.
Yeah. So was Obama the clear winner of that Wednesday debate?
I didn't think so, actually. I thought it was pretty much a draw. And I was surprised by the poll results being roughly 2-1 for Obama. It kind of told me that a lot of people had made up their minds. The audience was slightly more Democratic than Republican, but not substantially. But it told me basically that a lot of people watching it had already made up their minds and want to reinforce their own positions. In a debate sense, I thought McCain did a little bit better. If you're just judging it as a debate, he was a little more aggressive and he was hitting a little more details, and I thought he was a little more effective overall.
But apparently I heard that independent voters in particular, maybe they've made up their mind, might have been turned off by the talk about William Ayers and the aggressive tone and the nasty remarks or the rolling of the eyes and thought that Barack Obama was being, cool, calm, and collected and the leader we need during this economic crisis.
This seems to be a year where the public is a little tired of the negative ads. Mm-hmm. You know, the old adages, they always work, and people use them. And they clearly have been using them this fall, especially Republicans rather than Democrats, at least in a presidential race. And it seems like they've lost some of their effectiveness. The eye rolls and the negative. In a debate sense, however, when you're behind, you have a little more leeway to do that. And I think John McCain felt he had to get ahead and do a little bit more aggressiveness because he's behind.
Yeah, and he's behind by a lot in some polls. A number of polls have Barack Obama with a 10-point lead over John McCain, even here in Wisconsin. Another one that just came out the other day, a 17-point lead for Barack Obama over John McCain in our state?
I can't quite believe that. I've heard some criticism of that poll and previously, and I think they may exaggerate leads or either one way or the other. I think there's 3 to 4 polls in the last 2 weeks indicate that the lead is a little closer to around 10 points. We are doing a joint poll with WLSU and La Crosse Tribune. We're going to be releasing the results this weekend. And while I can't predict what the results are and I can't release them, they reflect fairly what the state's doing.
And without revealing details, there's no question that Barack Obama in these polls, including yours, is ahead of John McCain.
It appears that way in Wisconsin, certainly. The little hints that tell you that the McCain people know that. John McCain was here about a week ago. In fact, right in the middle we were doing the poll. And he cut his speech short. He was supposed to speak about 30, 35 minutes. He spoke about 15, 20 minutes. And he was supposed to take questions from the audience. It was supposed to be a town hall meeting. And he dropped that part of it. And he shook very few hands and kind of left. And I thought, this is odd. Maybe maybe he wasn't feeling good, which is possible. But now a week later, the Republican National Committee has pulled their ads from the state. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're pulling from the state entirely, at least the Republican campaign. It suggests maybe that their resources are going to go elsewhere.
Yeah, he's losing ground in some traditionally red states too, John McCain is.
Yeah, there's actually some interesting things going on. There's a few states that have been doing tracking polls that McCain has actually picked up a little bit the last two or three days. On the other hand, some other states it's going in the other direction. So you're getting sort of mixed results. I would expect across the next 2 weeks the race would tighten up. It's just normal that occurs, and it's going to end up being a relatively close race again, in my opinion.
We will wonder if you agree with Joe Heim's opinion and whether you have any questions or comments about the race for the White House. Can John McCain do anything to turn the tide toward Obama in the presidential race? 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you'd like to join us. By telephone, you can also email us, talk@wpr.org. If you're in our studio audience here at the Timbers, just raise your hand, and Cynthia Schuster, my producer, will come over to you. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Joyride is in Onalaska today, broadcasting on location from the Timbers on Highway 35. We are talking politics with UW La Crosse political scientist Joe Heim, talking about the last presidential debate, the latest charges and countercharges from the campaigns, the new polls that are out. You can join us by telephone, by email, or here on location. Professor Heim, we talked a little bit about how the RNC, the Republican National Committee, is pulling ad money out of Wisconsin to concentrate elsewhere. But I'm hearing that they're still funding robocalls, or maybe it's the McCain campaign that's funding the robocalls, getting telephone calls telling people that Barack Obama has terrorist friends and the like, referring again to William Ayers. And you received one of these?
I received three calls yesterday, the robo-type calls. One of them was from the McCain campaign. I think one was from the Republican committee, and basically identifying exactly what you're saying. These aren't quite what is referred to as push polls, where you start saying, would you still vote for so-and-so if he, in fact, is a terrorist or whatever. But they were clearly intended to cause doubt and fear in people's minds. So clearly that's the thing. These are relatively inexpensive, and that's why they do them.
Well, but are they effective? Do you think they could possibly be effective for John McCain's campaign?
I think that it's a type of technique which is losing its weight very quickly. People basically erase him as fast as they hear him. Most people do. Some people do listen to him because they're kind of interesting in a way. But ultimately, I think they're, like a lot of things, they have their time, and then after that, they kind of fade.
People just want to hear about probably most people have made up their minds, but we want to hear talk about the economic chaos that we're in. They don't want to hear anything else?
I think most people are interested in their pocketbooks. You may remember 3 weeks ago we were talking about lipstick on a pig, which I thought was pretty trashy politics, frankly. It had no relevance to anything. And yet now we're talking about national meltdown of the economy, Wall Street. These are very serious things to most people. Ultimately, I've always believed in American politics, people tend to vote their pocketbook. And this is clearly a pocketbook issue. I think most people realize we're either in a recession or moving into one. People are pulling back, and frankly, they're kind of nervous. They want the candidates to focus on positive things. I did hear last night a new ad for John McCain, which is more positive than he had been doing for quite some time. And I think in the last couple of weeks of an election, you really want to talk to the voters and say why they should vote for that person rather than continue to tax. I don't expect the tax will necessarily stop, but I expect the campaigns to focus to more positive things. And frankly, the economy, that's what people are interested in.
The day after the debate, Barack Obama's campaign also released a new ad saying, during the debate, John McCain said he's not George Bush. Well, and then proceeded to talk about how often he's voted for George Bush's tax policies.
Well, that's the both campaigns have a sort of basic message, and they're going to stick to their messages. The McCain people, what they're saying basically is you can't quite trust Barack Obama. Who is he? And that's why those radio, or excuse me, those phone calls are intended to sow a little bit seeds of fear in people. But ultimately, I think the positive messages are going to come out in a little more clearly in this. And I think, for example, the Obama people are still counterpunching. In other words, when an ad comes out that's negative directed at them, they're following the strategy of counterpunching as quickly as possible. And that's what that ad certainly shows.
You predicted that the race will tighten up, and you don't think it's going to be some huge double-digit or landslide in Wisconsin or anywhere else, for that matter, in this presidential race?
I would say it won't be a landslide. We don't know that yet. One of the things that normally happens, and if the messages are clear towards the end, the last two or three days, the undecideds at that point might be about 5, maybe even 7 points. They'll have to tip one way or the other. And what's happened in recent years is that the challenger tends to pick up the undecideds at the very end. So right now, I think people are beginning to decide. It's getting fewer and fewer. Are probably, according at least the way the polls and the way some measures indicate, are going to Obama and the margin is going to slow down. In the last 3 or 4 days, we'll find out whether or not it continues that way, or people tip towards the challenger at that point.
Obama was cautioning his supporters yesterday too, saying, don't get too cocky. We were way ahead in the polls in the primary season. And I've got two words for you, New Hampshire, meaning Hillary Clinton won New Hampshire when he, just days before that election, was apparently ahead in the polls.
The polls showed he was ahead. I think people kind of relaxed. He had just won Iowa previously. And I think people, his campaign thought, well, we got it here. And obviously it turned out to be a big surprise to them. A lot of the battleground states are extremely close right now. Even though you were talking about, 6 to 7 point, maybe even 10 point lead nationally, it varies with the poll. But within the battleground states, 6 or 7 of them are extremely close. Within 1 or 2 points, essentially, they're still up for grabs.
Yeah. Well, maybe our studio audience can tell us what they want to hear from these candidates with only 18 days to go before the election. Kind of a campaign you still want to see. We do have callers on the line. Mark in Mineral Point joins us first. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Mark. Hi, Joe. This is Mark Evenson calling. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, this is a question about Republican strategy, and I'm just wondering if you think that the shifting of resources, the ads and robocalls and so on, could be tied into the Republican strategy on Senate races.
On the races for U.S. Senate? I mean, he's gone. Maybe for Congress. Does the races for Congress have anything to do with this?
There's right now, there's more races in the Senate, that Republicans that are in danger of losing.
Okay.
Democrats figure they're going to pick up 5, possibly as many as 6, 7 seats. And on a real sweep of some kind, it could be more. They're obviously aiming for 60 to block the other party from blocking things in the U.S. Senate. Those races are very close, and it's very possible that part of the reason the National Republicans pulled out of Wisconsin is that they may want to redistribute the resources towards those races and basically put the ones in the state Senate races or U.S. Senate races so that they can at least pull out some of those victories. That's a possibility, and that maybe it's a get-out-the-vote, not so much for the president. Nobody's going to say they've, wrote this off already, but I think they could be redirecting the resources toward Congress.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on this, and maybe this is the time to do it. I did a series of candidate forums with the candidates for the 3rd Congressional District here in western Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. The incumbent is the Democrat Ron Kind, and he's facing a Republican challenger and a Libertarian challenger. Both of his challengers were railing away at his vote in favor of that $700 billion bailout or rescue, whichever you prefer. And I'm wondering if that vote is going to hurt Ron Kind at all in this area.
Polls show that the public is very leery about that bailout. They don't know all the details, but they just sense that this isn't what they think. The majority of people don't seem to think this is what the government should be doing. In some respects, it's so radically different from what the government had done in the in the past that I think people are a little worried about it. It's just a different role for the federal government. Most congressmen and senators that are relatively safe, however, felt that it was an absolutely essential thing to do, and they did vote for it. And Ron Kind is relatively safe in this district, and I think he felt that he had to do what he thought was right for the country. However, it's an easy challenge for a challenger to say this is not a good thing. And frankly, the public, I suspect, is on that side. So it's a campaign issue which any challenger ought to take up.
Even though Ron Kind said that 50% of his calls were from constituents saying no and the other 50% were saying hell no to the 70.
Great line, wasn't it? Yeah, it's what he's saying basically is he's not going to go with his constituency on this thing. And I think he was challenged by his I was listening to the interviews mm-hmm. you did. He was challenged by those people because of that. And he's saying, I've got to do what I think is right for the country and unfortunately not go along with what the district may have wanted.
Let's take another caller. Joyce in Delta is with us. Hi, Joyce. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi. I just have a comment. I watched the debate the other night, and I knew in advance that the news were going to say that Obama won and so on. See, I don't go along with that. I don't look at that as a win-win situation. I thought they both did really well. I don't see that that there was an obvious person who came out as being better and so on. But one of the things that I would like to say that as far as the two candidates are concerned, I think McCain is more ready to serve. I think he's the best man to lead as a commander-in-chief at this time.
Yeah. So there's evidence of a McCain supporter thinking the debate was a draw.
Well, relatively, if you just look at the experience of the two candidates, you'd have to say John McCain has greater amount of experience. So if the voters are looking for an experienced person, clearly with a long record, that's what they're going to get. On the other hand, they're looking for somebody that's new. They're interested in change. They don't want more of the same. They think it's time for change, that the country's on the wrong track. They have to decide if they're going to take a little more risk and go with a greater potential, a person they don't necessarily know everything about, but they think has a greater potential for what he could do for the country. And obviously that's Obama.
Well, tell us why Barack Obama, though, 3 weeks ago, started soaring in these national and state polls.
I think a lot of analysis that I heard dealt more with the economy. They said, well, the economy, Wall Street started falling apart, and at that point the polls started tipping towards Obama. I think it was the debates. Maybe a little of the economy, but I really think what Barack Obama did in the debates is reassure people that he was a relatively safe choice. He sounded presidential, he sounded calm in the face of a major crisis. He's calm, cool, he's very articulate, obviously, and I think he reassured millions of voters who really didn't know for sure whether they liked him. Reminded me a little bit of Ronald Reagan 20-some years ago, maybe 30, where we saw this actor coming out of California. We thought, who is this guy? And he basically in debates reassured people that he knew what he was doing and it sounded good. People trusted him after that.
We're talking with Joe Heim, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. We're talking about the latest in presidential politics, talking some about state political campaigns as well during this hour. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you will stop by the Timbers in Onalaska if you're anywhere near the area, or join us by telephone at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, talk@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the fifth week of our statewide tour that we call the Joyride. I'm Joy Cardine, happy to be in Onalaska today. Next Friday, Stevens Point. The Friday after that, River Falls. We are visiting different regions of the state during this election season, talking about the places, people, and politics that matter to you. This hour, we're talking about state and regional politics with a UW-La Crosse political science professor, Joe Heim. Joe Heim has been a frequent guest on Wisconsin Public Radio, but Professor Heim, I think this is the first time that we've actually seen each other and talked across the table from each other. So nice to see you.
It's my pleasure, actually. I've always enjoyed Wisconsin Public Radio, and I do like to do this from home, by the way, with my shoes on and my pajamas and coffee in front of me.
Thanks for dressing up. we're happy to have you here. We're happy to have a studio audience here as well at the Timbers in Onalaska. I think we have a chair for you if you are in the region and would like to stop by and a cup of coffee anywhere in the area. We'll be here until 9 o'clock talking politics. Next hour, it's our Week in Review. And we have two special guests coming up next hour in our Week in Review program, two retiring state legislators. We will be talking with Terry Musser and Barb Gronimus. They will be our Week in Review guests coming up in our 8 o'clock hour. And Professor Hem, why don't we just touch on that briefly? These are our two legislators who have been in representing the region or districts in the region for more than 20 years and decided not to seek re-election. So we have two open seats with candidates running for the state legislature around here.
La Crosse area in western Wisconsin is blessed with some really good races going on right now. We're surrounded by good elections. You know, a lot of the races around Wisconsin, they're really no contest, but we have about four or five really good ones here. The seats for both Terry Musser represents, I think, the 92nd, and Barbara Gronimus. The interesting thing about this is that both of them are moderate members of their own party. Terry, a moderate Republican, Gronimus, a moderate Democrat. And for both of them retiring at the same time essentially reflects just a little bit on the partisanship of the state legislature.
Yeah.
And the fact that both parties have moved a little more towards the left and right, respectively. And I think that bothers people who are moderate. Moderates generally solve problems and kind of pull people together. They're the ones that are the deciding votes a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to see them both go. They're both very fine legislators.
Why have things gotten so polarized, do you think, in the state and, for that matter, the nation?
I think a lot of it goes back to the redistricting. Both parties are not unhappy with designing districts that protect their own incumbent members. And what that means basically is if you can make an incumbent Democrat or incumbent Republican more safe, that both sides seem to be happy with that. And the result of that is you have candidates that tend to be a little more extreme, that there's less competitiveness in their districts, and as a result they have less need to work with each other.
What does it look like, Professor Heim, though? Is this going to be another year for the Democrats? Is Barack Obama and his at least lead in the polls right now and his popularity now going to have coattails that affect the races for Congress and state legislature for that matter?
A general rule in Wisconsin is that there are very few coattails. People love to split their votes in the state. So in Wisconsin, compared to other states, we don't have nearly as much of that. However, in 06, the elections in 06, I saw evidence of more coattails than I'd seen in a long time. Democrats did very well. It was one of those years where Democrats came out and voted and also voted for other Democrats. In other words, they were mad about the war. They were voting for certain Democrats, but the results carried over into Democratic races where nobody expected Democrats to win. And as a result of that, we did see a coattail effect. What remains to be seen this year is whether or not that would occur again. Are people going to go out and vote Democratic or Republican and vote more of a straight ticket? I still think people return to the old ways. What's going to determine that to some degree is a lot of the newer voters. We have record registrations in Wisconsin, as we do in many other states, by the way. Whether those people are going to vote straight party one way or the other remains to be seen. We don't know that yet until they actually go to the polls. For a new voter, however, it's relatively easy to vote party and straight ticket.
You know, we had a listener in our studio audience here who earlier wanted me to ask a question about J.B. Van Hollen's voter registration lawsuit, and there are charges now nationally of Acorn submitting fake or falsified names on voter registration lists. How is this going to affect the election, do you think?
It could, because both parties seem to be aware of voter suppression. Frankly, I am a strong supporter of democracy. I really believe the more people that vote, the better off we are. Therefore, any type of suppression techniques, I oppose. I just don't think it's right. There is very little real false voting, and there's enough laws basically in the books that can stop that type of stuff from going on. We don't need to suppress votes. We should be encouraging people to vote, not suppressing them. And I don't find that stuff healthy. The lawsuits and things of that sort at the very late timing, I just think don't work very well.
Let's take some more calls. Our lines are full right now, but once someone rings off, you can try to get in. 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email, talk@wpr.org. Or if you're in the studio audience, raise your hand and Cynthia will come over to you with our microphone. Ray in New London is with us. Hi, Ray. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
My question is about talking points that are not true. that are categorically not true. I'm kind of mad at John McCain for not challenging Barack Obama, stating that we are in the worst economy since the Great Depression. We aren't even in an economy that's worse than 1987. We got a long way to go to get to an economy that's as bad as the Carter years. And I don't understand why he didn't challenge that, and none of the news media did. And
right,
they seem to be going along with it.
What about that talking point that Ray brings?
Yeah, what's sad is we all know what they are. The fact that we all know that everybody uses talking points, you get the feeling that these things come out by email, and they send out thousands of talking points to all the whatever the party supporters are from both parties. They all do this. Instead of people thinking for themselves, I listen to talk radio and I listen to the cable news at night, and I hear sometimes the same things over and over again. Well, they're reading their talking points. The fact is, however, this is one of those years where both parties are stretching the tooth. I don't hate to use the word lie, but they're stretching the tooth. Very clearly, they're exaggerating things, and they're sort of misreading. If you have to do a lot of reading to find out whether or not something is or isn't true. I think the media is doing a better job this year of identifying that. The problem is you got to look for those things, those analysis of ads or analysis of comments. I think that media have done very well after the debates. A day or two later, they always do analysis of what was said, and frankly, you can find out there's a lot of half-truths and stretching to the truth.
I don't know if you happen to have in front of you the worst economy since 1987 versus the worst economy since the Great Depression. I mean, in any case, our economy is in some sad shape right now, isn't it?
It clearly is. I think it's pretty clear if you listen to the people that know this stuff, and I certainly am not an economist, but it's pretty clear we are moving into perhaps the worst recession we've had in decades. And I don't know how far back you have to go to say that. Right now, it's not. You know, unemployment, the GNP, the things we measure are not that terrible. But the prognosticators are saying we're moving into a very difficult period. This recession may last longer than most of ours. And that's the concern I think people really have.
An email from David. Do you think that with some of the recent bad press regarding Sarah Palin that the RNC is going to try to keep her out of the spotlight for the remaining 18 days?
It looks like it. She has not proven to be particularly good at interviews. She has not given a press interview of some kind of any substance, so I suspect that's true. Her role is different this year. They're going to stick to her strengths. She's going to appear to groups. She's going to rally the base, try to get them out to vote basically as much as possible. That's what her purpose really in this election is. And it seems like she's pretty effective at it. She draws large crowds, larger crowds than John McCain does.
Did John McCain do himself a favor, do himself some good by appearing on David Letterman last night and saying he screwed up for supposedly suspending his campaign and canceling his Letterman appearance a few weeks ago?
I thought it helped. He really didn't quite answer the screw-up part, though. I was sort of hoping that Letterman would say, what do you mean by that? Because I guess I'd like to know. Because obviously they made a decision not to do his show and to do Katie Couric. He didn't go back to Washington. So, you know, who screwed up? That's what I guess I'd like to know. It might have been his staff. It might have been himself making decisions. It appears that a lot of the parts of the campaign of John McCain are run by other people. I don't think he is in total control of the ads and total control of his own campaign.
Tommy Thompson, a former Wisconsin governor, also this week said how disappointed he was in the John McCain campaign, and he said, I don't know anyone who thinks they're doing a good job.
It just seems like the campaign has been a little disjointed. When you're running from behind, you really have to have, and he has been running behind for months other than the bounce he got off the conventions, you have to be a little bit better at putting things together. And his campaign doesn't look like it's totally coordinated. Part of it is simply because it's a year of change, and it's hard to deal with change when you're, in fact, the party of the White House. It's very difficult.
We will take more phone calls and emails and studio audience questions for Joe Heim, a professor of political science at UW La Crosse, after we check this weather forecast. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, broadcasting on location in Onalaska. Very good to be here at the Timbers. Very nice to have a studio audience here, and nice to have you listening along as we talk politics with Joe Heim, UW La Crosse political scientist. David in Ashland is our next caller. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about the supporters, the support groups for the candidates, and why they don't actually filter or research people that they use as examples. And it's specifically about this Joe Plumber, who we're finding out now isn't really a plumber and, you know, has some back taxes and just all kinds of bad stuff that wouldn't you think that they're... groups would actually research these people before they use them as national television examples, and I've seen it happen in the past. So that's kind of what my question's about, is why don't they check that more?
Yeah, good question. That's why didn't they know all this already?
That's an example of an organizational, and in a sense what we were talking about before, the Obama, the McCain campaign is not quite all that hitting on all cylinders. And that's an example where they should have done some homework and some research to make sure they had this correct. They didn't. It does embarrass them a little bit. It isn't a big thing. But for a day or two, people go, oh, you know, what's wrong with it? How come they got that wrong? If they got that wrong, are they going to get other things wrong? So it's not good.
Yeah. I mean, I said I thought we heard the last of Joe the Plumber, but maybe the Obama side can use the Joe the Plumber for a while. We had a question from the audience, and I don't know if concerned about an October surprise, maybe as something as horrible as he wonders an Israel attack against Iran. What do you make of, what do you think of that possibility or the October surprise element, Professor Heim?
It seems as if in recent elections we've had one version of that in one way, shape, or form in the last two or three presidential elections. And those things can tip the election one way or the other. The public doesn't always focus a lot on what's been going on in the last 6 months or years. Sometimes it's whatever in front of us tips us one way or the other. So an October surprise, yes, something can happen. President Bush obviously would like to see McCain win the election. He has some control over October surprises. But let's assume that international forces have potential October surprises as well. I would not be surprised if Obama, for example, has at least some thoughts about what might be a good October surprise for him as well, whether it's to use in a campaign.
John in Madison is on the line. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. You there?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Real quick statement, and I know this isn't the forum for people to make a lot of statements or questions, but the statement is before the question. I've noticed throughout the campaign that anytime anyone questions Mr. Obama's integrity or his relationship, his campaign has a great tactic, and that is to shift the focus away from his integrity or any questions about his personal past and say that anybody who does that is not focusing on the issues, and they are basically controlling what the issues are by doing that. Now, the question I have is, how can the McCain camp at this late stage in the game counter that tactic so that they can focus on questions about Mr. Obama's integrity, which I have a lot of questions about it because there's not a lot out there.
All right, thanks very much, John.
Well, he has a pretty limited background. You have to go back, and it's one of the reasons that McCain was using the state Senate in Illinois voting, because he doesn't have a big background. But basically, you know, the heirs issue is a background issue, and they're questioning the integrity, questioning the judgment of Obama because of that. So it's not totally left aside. In other words, it's an issue. But the reality is most of the public does not care about that stuff. At this point, we have a fairly good idea who Obama is, who McCain is, and I think most people are interested in what they're going to do in the future rather than looking back in the past and trying to find out what happened when they were in grade school or high school.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of heirs, Obama has said, you know, this guy did horrible things when I was 8 years old, and I served on this educational board with him. And so, I mean, how is he not addressing the questions of his association with William Ayers?
I think he's, as far as most people, I think he's addressed it adequately. However, I think the McCain people feel they've got something here. A couple weeks back, they were throwing everything at Obama to see what would stick. This seems to have stuck a little bit. I'm guessing they do polling. So they find out this. And basically, there's something there. Last night... John McCain virtually said that that Barack Obama hasn't told us the truth on this whole thing. There's more to it. We want to know the truth. Well, this is a tried and true technique to cause distrust and uncertainty in the eyes of the public. So they recognize that there's some value in this, and they're using it.
Louise in Hillsborough is with us now. Hi, Louise. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. You know, there is a lot out there on Obama. I have done a lot of reading. I've read his books that are out there. I have read everything I can get my hands on. It's hard for me to imagine what people are looking for, but the man has a very great discerning mind, and that's what we need in a leader right now. It feels to me like John McCain flies by the seat of his pants, and, you know, I mean, both of these men have been under terrible scrutiny for months and months. I can't believe that people think we don't know anything about them.
I agree with that. If you don't have enough information now, you haven't been paying much attention for the last year, frankly. I mean, we've heard these people talk for the last 6 months through the entire spring, basically. Plus, there's an enormous amount of information on the Internet on these candidates, far more than we were used to, frankly. And it's there. It's all you have to do is look. It's not very hard to even look. So the average voter, I think, is pretty comfortable with both candidates. And that's what the polls tell us, too.
I know you have conducted a poll recently, the results being released later today on the presidential race and other things. Does your poll or any talk about how many undecided voters there still are in Wisconsin? Have we all made up our mind, or how many are out there maybe might switch between now and Election Day?
Even with these large margins, if it's 7 to 10%, for example, in Wisconsin, if you see the undecideds tip towards one candidate, for example, McCain, and there are people who are saying they're thinking of voting for Obama or McCain, they are still undecided in the sense that they are persuadable. You add those people in, and that can tip the election in either direction. So there's still room for wiggling here, and there's nothing set in stone at this point.
Larry in Madison is with us now. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Thank you. Previous caller refers McCain as commander-in-chief, but my comment is this. The most important thing a commander-in-chief can do is keep us out of war. Mr. McCain has not yet spelled out one substantial way in which his foreign policy would be different than George Bush's. In 2000, campaigning, McCain called for the overthrow of regimes, even if they posed no imminent threat to the United States. Thank you.
Okay, do you have a reaction to that, Professor?
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that. I think his foreign policy is very similar, and I think you'd expect the same thing. He's pretty well promised that he's going to carry on the same type of policies. The reason why this doesn't resonate that much is Iraq has dropped in importance in the polls. It's now number 2, 3, or 4, depending on what poll you're looking at. The economy has just sucked the oxygen out of the issue area.
Yeah.
That's far and away the biggest issue. Iraq has faded. The war on terrorism has faded. And consequently, even though you might argue that the policies are the same or similar, it doesn't seem to make a lot of difference to people at this point.
Yeah. So what aren't the candidates talking about that they should be talking about?
Well, I think there are some issues, Joy, that I would really like to hear more about. In two different debates, for example, the questions dealt with we can't buy everything, and we can't spend money. We don't have the money. With the deficit, with the enormous, you know, the bailout issue, you know, what are you going to cut? And neither candidate will talk about that. They're ducking that one because if they say, well, we're going to cut Social Security or we're going to cut this or that, you're going to alienate some group out there. So they're ducking that, frankly. I think, for example, one of the biggest issues of our time is the national debt, $10 trillion and rising. The entire cost of the Iraq war has been transferred to debt. We have paid every penny of the war on debt. We borrowed this war, first time in history. It's very clear that Social Security, Medicare, are major issues of our time. This bailout is going to add nothing more but to the debt. We're going to have $700-800 billion debt this coming year. Enormous increases compared to what we were, you know, $430 billion. Is the biggest amount we've ever had, and that's just last year, and it's going to almost double perhaps in the next year. To me, this is passing on to future generations the cost of these wars, the cost of the bailouts, and the younger people are going to be paying the bills.
Well, on that cheery note, Professor Limehouse, we still have one more minute to go. Don't mean to put you on the spot or anything, but how much does Barack Obama win by on November 4th in Wisconsin?
That's not fair. I would expect him to win, at least unless there's some October surprise. There could be a certain type of October surprise which could tip this entire election to John McCain. And it's still possible out there. So I don't think you should predict this stuff. But right now, it certainly looks like Barack Obama is a favored person in the state of Wisconsin.
Thanks very much for being here.
My pleasure, and, Joy.
Talk to you again over the telephone, probably.
Thanks for coming to Western Wisconsin.
It's been a pleasure. And thanks to everybody here at the Timbers for stopping by. I hope that you'll stay tuned. We will talk about the Week in Review. We're broadcasting from the Timbers in Onalaska. This is the Joy Ride. Welcoming your participation as we talk about the Week in Review after the news. This is the Ideas Network.